very good morning to you. Welcome into today's program. We're looking at the traffic situation throughout the morning. Send us in, by the way, some voice messages. It's just, there was an accident on the bridge today. This happens, but it absolutely gridlocked the city from Barna all the way to Mycullen and all the way as far as Oranmore and onwards are from there. Send us some voice messages to 086 38 33 553. There's a teacher's shortage, yet they can't get jobs. Galway Gardaí are seeking your advice today. There's postal chaos in Galway City. Why is that? We're trying to get some answers on that today. We're looking at child poverty, pensions indeed for wives of farmers. We're looking at care of the older people and much more between now and 12 midday. Just don't go anywhere else. Now, a very good morning to you. Welcome in to today's programme. The comment lines are all open if you want to get through to us today. We would like to hear from you today on the programme. And please do get in contact and keep in contact with us today. I have to say, the calls are coming in hot and heavy. Any update on the traffic this morning? 1 hour and 10 minutes from Clarence Bridge, and I'm only at the lights at Dunn Stores in Galway. And other calls coming in too to that effect in relation to the traffic. So what happened, simply, if you're listening to Johnny earlier on, there was an accident on the bridge. Two cars had an accident and it blocked two lanes. So basically it brought the lanes to a standstill from there. Gardaí were on the scene fairly quickly. The bridge is now opened again, but from Mycullen, Oughterard actually, somebody was on to me this morning, just coming out of Oughterard, they were stuck in traffic into the N59, into Mycullen, all the way in. So if you were expecting employees or colleagues or somebody for school today and they're late, it's all genuine. A colleague of ours from Dunmore took 2 hours to get in today, and there's people from the Mycullen region stuck in Salt Hill and Oughterard this morning. So it is a problem, but send us voice messages if you want to. Nice ones now, by the way. No vulgar language, thank you. 086 38 33 55 3. Now, a survey has highlighted the acute teacher shortages impacting vulnerable children. And the INTO General Secretary, indeed, Central Executive Committee Member for Galway and Roscommon, Gerard Murray, joins me on the line today. Gerard, good morning to you. Thanks indeed for joining. No, he was there a second ago. Can we just see, can I get Gerard again there? He was there a second ago and... see, can we get him back up again? Try one more time and just see from there. Can I get him up? Just somebody else has said to me, Keith, 1 hour coming in from Mycullen, I'm still not at Dangle. The council should put on a park and ride to ease the traffic, this caller said. Can't really do anything about it right now, can they? But in the long term, they need to do something like that as well. Keith, an hour and 15. From Oughterard, and I'm just coming into coming through Mycullen right now, but can you please tell my boss it's not my fault? And another caller said to us today, Keith, the situation with traffic is bananas today. 1 hour Keith to come from Newcastle to Lisbon Estate, and it took 1 hour to do so from there. And just keep them coming into us, by the way, 086 38 33 55 3, if you want to get in contact with us. Left Roscahill at 7:45 this morning, and I'm just coming into Dangan as we speak today. So that's what the problem is there. Now, though, let me go to Gerard, who joins me, Gerard Murray, who joins me on the line, indeed, from the INTO, and he joins me on line one today. Gerard, good morning to you.
Good morning, Keith.
Thanks for joining us today on the programme. Now, the survey is highlighting acute teacher shortages and it's impacting vulnerable children as well. I suppose the supply hasn't been coming through the colleges quickly enough. Is that one of the main problems?
I suppose it is one of the problems, Keith. We're in an unprecedented situation at the moment. We undertook this survey in the INTO because we were hearing from our members on the ground how bad the situation is, and it has certainly, the survey has certainly highlighted that. It found that in total we have a current shortfall of 809 permanent, fixed-term and long-term substitute teachers in the schools that responded to the survey. And I suppose then, to make matters worse, those schools have also indicated that they anticipate having an additional 1,200 long-term vacancies within the next 3 months.
And the vacancies in question, because a lot of students would have graduated primary school teachers would have graduated in the last couple of weeks from the various colleges. So is there not adequate supply with those coming online?
Unfortunately, there isn't. I suppose teaching has always been quite attractive in Ireland, and we don't have a difficulty in attracting teachers to teacher training, or, you know, students to teacher training courses. But we need an increased number of places, I suppose. And the other issue, I suppose it's more of an issue of retaining the teachers that we have, of retention. You know, there are many teachers who are registered with the Teaching Council who are now working in other parts of the world. Irish teachers are very sought after. You know, we know of many teachers who are now working in Australia, the Middle East, Dubai in particular, and they're very highly regarded and thought of there. And I suppose it's very difficult to get those teachers back when the terms and conditions in those countries are very attractive.
It is, but it's kind of their rite of passage, though, Gerard. I don't know, did you do it now, to be quite honest? I'm not being smart. But it is their rite of passage to do so. And normally they do come back. But I suppose my question would be, if you take what we've lost, say to the likes of Dubai and Australia and elsewhere, and you see how many would have come out of college this year from the various teaching colleges?
Well, I would agree with you, Keith, that it certainly has been a rite of passage. And I mean, we're always delighted to see people who travel and to gain experience in that way. I suppose the difference that I would see in recent years is that it's much more difficult to get people back. So let's say in the past, we'd often have teachers who have taken a year out to go traveling. And then the usual course would be that the vast majority of them would have returned. That has proved much more difficult in recent years, I suppose because they get on very well often in their international schools. They often move up along the career path and they get promoted posts. And because, I suppose, we are still, you know, the career structure is limited in teaching in Ireland. We had many more posts of responsibility, where, you know, teachers could become parts of leadership teams in schools in the past. We are down 2,400 of those leadership posts from the austerity era, I suppose.
What posts are they, can I ask you, Gerard, when you talk about those posts?
So that's it, Keith, when you have teachers working in a school and you have management and middle management positions. And we are down 2,400 posts from those times of austerity, and I suppose if we had more leadership opportunities for those teachers who are abroad, it would certainly encourage and incentivize them to come back. So those posts, let's say, they do very important work where you'd be leading maybe different areas of the curriculum of the school, supporting children and supporting the management structure in the school.
But I suppose, Gerard, and maybe it's not a popular question to ask, but I'm talking to the NTO Central Executive Committee member for Galway and Roscommon, Gerard Murray. But should it be mandatory that when they come out of college that they give 4 or 5 years of their teaching experience and a commitment to 5 or 10 years? Because, I mean, they were educated by the state and their families, and surely that's one way of trying to hold on to them.
They certainly were educated by the state and educated to a very high level, Keith. And I suppose that's the issue, that our teachers are so well trained that they're sought after. I think before I would look at that.
Are you gone on me? Gerard, are you there? I think Gerard is in a very delicate area, so he is. We'll see if I can get him back one more time from there. Keith, this caller said to me here, 1 hour coming in from my Cullen and still not a dang in, Keith. I'm not just there yet. The traffic on the coast road from Invern through Barna and it works at Westside, etc. It's bananas. I left Invern at 8 a.m. and I'm only at Taylor's Hill traffic now, and it's now currently 9:20. Traffic stuck, this caller said, stuck at 7:30 bus. I'm stuck on the 7:30 bus from Headford. We're only at Clan de Minerals, but the bus is due into our square at 8:03. Galway traffic is out of control. It will be 10 o'clock before I get to college at this rate, and it's just not good enough, this caller said. Another caller said, Keith, I left Roscahill at 7.45 and I'm only coming into Busher Park right now. Hi, this caller said, the traffic flow in Galway is a disgrace. Galway City Council should have planned for the growth of the city. Galway City needs a light rail system, a good bus service, and it's absolutely crazy what is going on today, this caller said. Gerardy, you're back with me again, are you?
Hello, Keith.
I don't know what happened there, but you're back again. Going back to that commitment, when they're trained to a very high standard in Ireland, like I've said the same thing about doctors and junior doctors, should they have to mandatory give service to their country?
Yeah, well, I suppose, Keith, if you're looking at attracting more people to the sector, I always think that a carrot approach always works much better than a stick approach. And we have always attracted a high caliber of students to teaching. And I think a better approach would be to look at creating more places in the teacher training colleges for students. And then in addition to that, to improving the terms and conditions. I mean, we're dealing with a worldwide market now for teachers.
Yeah.
And we want the teaching profession to attract the best here in Ireland. And I think that, you know, the carrot approach to encourage people would be a much better approach.
Somebody said here, Keith, what you're forgetting with the man you're talking to is that young teachers can't get affordable accommodation. No wonder they're leaving this country.
That is coming back very strong in the survey, Keith. I suppose it's very clear from the survey that the east of the country is particularly affected when it comes to the longer-term positions. Out of those 809 vacancies in total that are in the system at the moment, longer-term vacancies, 513 of them were in Dublin. But I suppose it's not just a Dublin issue. It also affects other urban areas and also other counties in the east, including Kildare, Meath, Louth and Wicklow. I suppose the problem isn't as pronounced in Galway at the moment in relation to longer term vacancies. Galway schools have done a fantastic job in getting teachers into permanent and fixed term positions.
Yeah.
But it is very difficult to fill short term positions. You know, I've been a principal for 18 years and I've never seen it as difficult to fill substitute positions. It's very difficult at the moment.
And it's the education of the next generation, Gerard, we're talking about here. We're not just being flippant about it. I mean, this is their future and every day counts.
Absolutely, Keith. I mean, parents have a very reasonable expectation that when they send their children out to school in the morning that they will be taught by a qualified teacher. And unfortunately, this survey, I suppose, has identified that there's a disproportionate adverse impact on certain schools. And disadvantaged children and children with additional needs are especially being impacted. Our Jesh Band 1, our disadvantaged schools, our Gael schools and our special schools have a particular issue with recruitment at the moment. And that's something none of us can stand over or would want to see.
Where is the solution, finally, can I ask you, Gerard Murray, Executive Committee Member for Galway and Roscommon with the ITO, INTO, where is the solution? I mean, is it at Norma Foley's desk, or can we throw everything at her? Or is it all just a slow process of education and getting more people into training in college, teacher training in college?
I think there are a number of answers to that, Keith. I suppose the INTO are willing and ready to sit down with the department in relation to this. I think it's more than Norma Foley, because certainly we need to increase the numbers of places in teacher training colleges.
So that would be Simon Harris then you need to sit with?
For sure, yeah. I mean, look, this is going to involve cross-government support to make progress on this issue. We also really need to put a focus on making teaching in Ireland attractive and to bring back those wonderful teachers that are currently working abroad, and many of them now who have moved much further past the 1 or 2 years that you mentioned.
Absolutely.
Some of them between 5, 10 and 15 years. And also, of course, the housing issue. It's very clear that areas with high rents, high cost of living and high house prices are also being adversely affected.
We won't solve it today, but I just hope that somebody takes it very seriously out there. But again, when you take it, if they're in Dubai or they're wherever they are and they're having the nice lifestyle and all that goes with it, 95% of them will come home again, be it Australia and or otherwise. But I mean, where are they going to live? That is the big question, really, Gerard, at this stage. When they come back, even if it's after 10 years abroad, what can they afford to buy and where can they live?
Absolutely. So, I mean, it's going to take a number of different responses from different sections in the government, and we are certainly in the INTO very open and willing to sit down and to continue to try to improve this very difficult and unprecedented situation that we're in at the moment.
All right. But they'd want to sit down with you in the coming weeks before Christmas. They need to sit down with you and put a plan in place from there. Gerard, will you keep in contact with us, please, if you don't mind? Thank you indeed for joining us today on the programme. And a very good morning to you. Mind yourself. Thank you indeed for joining us. Keith, could you tell that gob, you know what's at the end of that, don't you? It's a dirty word. Who just overtook me at the new lights on the bridge in Craigmore. That red means stop. No wonder, Keith, there's accidents. It's absolutely dreadful. Keith, the traffic is mental. They should make park and ride available everywhere to minimise the traffic. Traffic in Galway, really? This caller said with the question mark. I wonder, should we consider a bypass or a ring road? That's right. They say that we don't need it. We will never solve this problem with the way things are going. How long has the discussion been going on for without any progress? Bureaucrats will still be talking about this 40 years from now. And that comes from Vincent Conway today. And this stupid country will have housing problems when they refuse planning to a young lady who met every requirement required except that she was 1.2k too far from her home house to qualify, although it was on the family-owned property. And so now she's going to go renting a house that someone else could have. May not be the perfect site like she had, but the stupidity of the system is beyond belief. Only in Ireland would this happen, this caller said. And there's somebody sending me videos as well of the traffic situation and how bad it is. And somebody else is sending me videos of a skirmish that took place in Abbeygate Street last night. Does it ever stop? Keep those comments on traffic coming into us, 086 38 33 55 3. Please, just keep them coming in. We will get to them very quickly. I promise you, we will get to them. But we'll put them together and we'll put them all up on the system and read them to you from there. Now, there's been a drop in the number of children in poverty, but the figure still remains very high. Social Justice Ireland is represented by Suzanne Rogers, who's the research and policy analyst with SJI, and she joins me on the line today. Suzanne, morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for joining us today. Do you know what doesn't sit well with me, Suzanne? It's not your fault, by the way. When the word children and poverty is in the one sentence, it's very sad.
Unless you're reading Charles Dickens, I completely agree with you. Like, in a modern, wealthy Western country, it doesn't sit well. And it's extraordinary that you'd have a headline one day that would talk about the country's at full employment. You'd have a headline the next day that talks about a budget surplus, followed by that we have almost 190,000 children who are living in households who are living in poverty. So it doesn't make sense. And we had a Pubble report, I think last week before, that looked at, you know, where these pockets of disadvantage are. So it is in a country where, you know, we seem to be doing okay. We have a cost of living crisis at the moment. We've just come out of a pandemic. We are leaving this large cohort of children behind, there's no doubt.
And Suzanne, the other aspect of this, now you'd be far more learned on this than I would be, but when I was reading through your report and the another report during the week, poverty costs this country billions of euro on an ongoing basis, and yet we don't seem to be getting it right. Because when you look at what came out last year, when it's the Central Statistics Office last year said that 301 euro per person for an adult is what's needed on a weekly basis to survive, but you're a lot of people aren't getting near that.
Like, I genuinely think I'm losing my mind sometimes, because that exactly that argument. The government has an anti-poverty commitment with the SDGs, which is to eradicate poverty in all its forms everywhere by 2030. And we also have an anti-poverty commitment in the Roadmap for Social Inclusion to reduce consistent poverty to 2% or less by 2025. And exactly that. If you look at where the poverty line is and then look at what social welfare, what the state pension, what anybody in receipt of carers or disability or invalidity or low impairment, what they receive. So anybody who's reliant on social welfare for their primary source of income, immediately it's below that. So I don't understand how we as a country are going to meet our poverty targets if we're not going to tackle it through social welfare. And the argument you always get is, well, get a job. And then you kind of go, well, hang on a second. We have hundreds of I think it's 133,000 people that what the class is the working poor. So there's an argument to be had about the types of jobs, well-paid jobs, decent work, you know, consistent hours, a living wage versus minimum wage. But it really does go back to, you know, what are the barriers maybe to people engaging in employment and looking at those in rural Ireland? It will be transport, it will be childcare, it will be where are the jobs, where are you situated and how close can you get to them? So it's a multifaceted thing. But I mean, housing is key. And again, you're right, like, poverty costs the state so much money. We have all of these arguments about this, the health overspend. But I genuinely think, and again, maybe I'm too simplistic about it, but I think if we solved housing and we solved poverty, that would have to impact on the amount of people who enter the health system because of frailty, because they haven't been able to keep the heat on, because they haven't had seven dinners this week. You know, all of these things are linked. So poverty isn't... You know, if they increase social welfare rates, you know, the pushback you always get is, well, we're going to make this commitment at a time when we don't know about our finances. And I'm kind of going, well, these are people's lives that are being ruined exactly. On a daily basis because of this.
Exactly. But Susanna, on the other side, and we have a great country, and we have a lovely country, we have a safe country, and we've got a great country. But I mean, we could throw the kitchen sink at this, at the country when it came to COVID. Are we not in a similar position right now where if you're telling me that somebody is going to bed cold and somebody is going to bed hungry and somebody is going to school, I know the hot dinners scheme that we've discussed many times on this program here will alleviate that problem. But we need to do more, because these are the next generation that need to get through this generation so that they can get to work and they can make a change.
I think it sends this message about who we value, how we make political decisions, where we allocate our resources, who gets what. I've just passed a load of school kids this morning going in, little ones all going in with guitars, and I'm kind of going, okay, so that's obviously a school where the parents, for, you know, if the children are having music lessons, all of these parents were able to go out. Now, probably the cheapest guitar you could get for a seven-year-old, I don't doubt it. But to be able to put those resources into those children, and then for other children, really to not be able to access those same basic things. And that's why we really welcomed the hot school meals, we really welcomed the free school books, because that also removes stigma when all children get the same thing in schools. That's so important. But I mean, every month we have record homelessness figures being recorded, thousands of children without a stable, secure home. I mean, all other rights, your ability to flourish comes from being able to know where you're going to put your head tonight, and that it's a safe, secure home, and that your parents aren't stressed as well. Like, kids pick up on all of these things. Of course they do. There's a lot of damage being done to these young people. There's no doubt about it.
Prior to you coming on, we were talking to the INTO about the lack of teachers, and some of them are going abroad and all of that. Mm-hmm. And the big situation that came back to Suzanne Rogers was that, you know, teachers, primary school teachers that have graduated in the last couple of years, they can't afford to go to Dublin to work in Dublin because they can't afford the accommodation. So thereby, the children in question are not getting the teaching that they need because there isn't an adequate supply of them. So it really is one massive big circle that we have here. And there's a few problems that need to be sorted, and sorted fairly quickly. Housing seems to be one, but definitely to look after the next generation coming up, to give them a chance in life that you and I have, is what's needed here.
Very much so. I mean, I know from my own experience, like my child goes to, I live in a Dublin suburb, my child goes to a school where they weren't able to offer certain subjects for junior cert. And that, as you said, that is not because we lack teachers. We have the qualified staff. We are a very well-educated country, but it's exactly that. Like, we have teachers who are driving in from Kilkenny, they're coming in from Monaghan, and they churn through these teachers so quickly as well, because as soon as they get a job anywhere closer to where they live, yeah, they're gone. So it's exactly that. It's not because we lack qualified staff. It's because on a basic wage, people can't afford to live. I mean, the Parliamentary Budgetary Office did a fantastic piece of work around the budget on housing affordability. And between 2012 and 2022, average wages increased by 27%, house prices by 75%, and rent by 90%. So you can see there's just this huge gap between our take-home pay and what it costs to actually put a roof over our head.
But Suzanne, the cost of living has gone through the roof as well. I spoke to a colleague yesterday who, again, as a treat for the family, went and got a pizza in a fairly major pizza chain, or a fairly major pizza location in Galway. And the last time they bought a pizza, which was a while ago, I don't know when, they paid €12 for the pizza. Now, maybe a year later, they paid €15.95 for the same pizza. They were just staggered. Now, I know from the pizza operator's point of view, the cost of the raw material and the yeast and the heat and the insurance and the power and all of that type of stuff, that's gone through the roof as well. But like, that's a significant, from 12 to the guts of €16, that's quite a significant percentage increase in the price of a pizza, which he decided to get. Yeah. It wasn't necessary food, he decided to get it.
Yeah. But I suppose it goes back to that whole thing about, you know, the working poor. If you, you know, my mentality is, if you're clocking up a 40-hour week, and again, you know, to also look at unpaid work and caring work and voluntary work. You know, we all put into our communities in whatever shape or form. And if you can't afford a little treat every now and then, like, that makes that really, really difficult. So as you said, a pizza's not an extravagance. He wasn't going to a Michelin star. He wasn't, he wasn't having a 27-course tasting menu. He was just getting, as you said, a chain store pizza. And I think, but that's the thing, if you go around the supermarket and everything has gone up by a euro or 50 cent or 75 cent, by the time you get to the checkout, your weekly shop is an extra 20, 25 quid. And I think that's for, you know, there are households that have been able to absorb that, and there are households that just simply haven't been able to absorb that. And I think that's really the key, is, you know, these households that are living in poverty, there's such a big difference between cutting back and cutting out. And I think that's where, again, in a country where, you know, we are allegedly at full employment, there's work for everybody if they want it, according to one politician I heard recently, you know, it doesn't recognise what the difficulties and the barriers are sometimes.
No.
But I think, you know, if people are reliant on social welfare, and the majority of people in receipt of social welfare are pensioners and those unable to work through illness and disability.
Yeah.
So I think that's really key to remember, that, you know, who we value in society.
Well, I think we have to put a value on everybody in society, but including the unborn, the born, those that are in play school, those that are in primary school, those that have gone into secondary school, those that will be going into college. I mean, that's the trajectory we should be on altogether. Stan, you and I can't sort out the world today, but if they want to get further details, they can go to the Social Justice Ireland website and get further details from there. And you're the research and policy analyst with SJI. Thanks for joining us, and keep up the good work that you do on an ongoing basis. And let's hope that a little bit of common sense will prevail with the government. Now, they can't have money, Suzanne, for everything, but we need them to just really take that children and poverty, those two words, in a sentence, and see can they just elongate that.
That's the hope. I mean, we have a child poverty and wellbeing unit established in the office of the Taoiseach, which shows a commitment to this issue. It also shows, I suppose, a recognition that there is a problem. But I mean, I think we do have money. I think if you look at maybe where that money goes, sometimes decisions are made politically that if we made slightly different decisions, we would have slightly different outcomes. And I think that's really what we're pushing for all the time.
Suzanne, keep up the good work. Thank you for joining us today. That's Suzanne Rogers joining us from Social Justice Ireland there. And she's research and policy analyst. Keith, can we put the argument over the bypass to bed after this morning's traffic debacle? One accident and the city grinds to a halt. It's a no-brainer. Galway needs a ring road. So frustrating. And that comes from Fergal in Knocknacara. Fergal, you're dead right. But it's one bridge. One bridge could bring the whole of Galway City to a grinding halt. From on Spidgale this morning, from on Spidgale all the way over to Uachtarard, all the way over to Headford, into Clare Galway, over to Oran Moor, all the way, just absolutely gridlocked. Now the accident happened. We have to take that into account. Hopefully nobody was seriously hurt, but it's just frustrating. Keith, it's not that long ago that briquettes were €4. Now they're nearly €10. See? Basic commodity. Another caller said, Keith, we need a bus lane to be built from Spiddle into Galway. The bus never makes it in on time from there. Keith, this caller said, McCroom got their small bypass officially opened yesterday after waiting for 30 years. I'm weary hearing about traffic in Galway, this caller said. And somebody else has sent me in three videos, and it wasn't Abbeygate Street, it was in Main Guard Street, and I don't know what it was and otherwise, and then casting aspersions on me that I won't mention who's involved in it. Blah, 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 blah. I don't know who's involved in it. And you know what? I ain't going to mention who's involved in it, because I don't know. Now, let me go to the heart of a most beautiful building, I have to say, based on the keys in Dublin. The Central Bank are represented by Peter Gallagher, because I noticed during the week that they were reporting on a scam campaign which uses social media, video, radio ads to give consumers some tips on how to avoid scams, fraudsters, bogus financial services, etc. And Peter joins me on the line today. Peter, morning to you.
Good morning, Keith. Thanks for joining us today.
No, you're very welcome. You know, we can talk about this for the next 7 minutes, and we could talk about it for the next 7 hours, but it's about people's actions, really, that they have to consider before they take the action in question.
That's right, Keith, and we're running a public awareness campaign at the moment in relation to these types of financial scams for exactly that purpose, I suppose, just to help people to sort of spot or identify or protect themselves from this type of activity, particularly in the area of fake loans, which we see a lot of at the moment, and fake investment products that we see a lot of at the moment. And these are essentially been operated by criminals, ultimately. And the scale of this has gone through the roof, really. It's reported, just to give you a sense of the scale of it, it was reported that approximately €85 million was lost to these types of scams last year. And we've seen probably a 70% increase in reports of this type of activity year on year to the Central Bank of Ireland this year.
So, again, from talking to somebody on this one recently enough, indeed, they nearly got caught, Peter, but effectively they needed money. They didn't go to registered sources. They went online and they entered into a conversation, and then the crunch came where a fee had to be paid. And when they refused to pay the fee until they got their own money first, the conversation ended.
Well, that's a really good example of what's happening out there at the moment. And it's a thing that's called advanced fee fraud. And it's very common, and it's one to be really aware of in the run-up to Christmas, with pre-Christmas sales and all that. Sometimes people make decisions around personal finance. They may want to access a personal loan, whether on a short-term basis or the likes. And essentially how this scam operates, advanced fee fraud, is you apply for a what you think is a legitimate product, in this case a loan, and just at the point of that loan being advanced, you're asked for a fee. The fee might be called a tax or a government charge or a stamp duty. They've even called it a central bank fee. They'll call it any number of different things, and it might be a relatively small amount relative to the size of the loan that you're applying for. But of course, once you pay that fee, the line goes dead. There is no loan. It's a scam. So we would certainly warn people to be very careful, particularly at this time of year, if they're availing of that sort of loan and they're asked to pay a fee up front. It is a very big warning sign.
It is. But again, it's the action. There's no such thing as a free loan. There's no such thing as a cheap loan and or otherwise. And maybe we say it on this program quite a bit, Peter, maybe exhaust the other options like your local credit union. Maybe start there.
Yeah, look. I think the really important thing is there's a question there when you're dealing with any financial service is, do you know who you're dealing with? Do you know and trust who you're dealing with, whether that's a particular firm, whether a credit union or some other type of financial firm, or whether it's an individual who's contacted you? And that's one of the sort of red flags we'd say to people to watch out for, or a question to ask themselves. Do I know, do I trust who I'm dealing with here? Another one is in terms of red flags is, have I been contacted out of the blue? So frequently, you know, these fraudsters come sort of out of the blue, and you have to ask yourself, why have I been contacted here? Did I seek out this product or service? Another one that we frequently would see, and we see it with those loan scams that I mentioned, was, are you being put under pressure to act quickly? Whether that's sort of to get some sort of special offer or rate or discount, or sometimes on the loans they say, oh, well, if you act quickly, we won't have to do the normal credit checks that normally apply. Again, these are big red flags that you just won't get from dealing with a legitimate financial firm. And the other one I'd say to people is that they'd often get offered maybe a rate or a benefit that is so good it's completely out of step with what's available out there in the market. Again, it's another big red flag for people. So there are just a few sort of maybe practical things that people can watch out for.
But how do you bore that into the brain of the people out there and say, listen, please don't front load, don't give somebody money unless you haven't got the loan. You know, question yourself, is this right? Is it right for you? Is it right for the family? You know, just question it.
Well, I think that's exactly the reason why we're on the show here this morning, Keith, and actually running this public awareness campaign. It's just about education, really, and about, I suppose, making this a conversation that people are comfortable having and talking about these things. Because actually, by people talking about sort of the scams they're seeing or the things that they think might be a scam, to whether it's their friends or their family or a trusted advisor, it's by creating that awareness that will actually help us all to protect ourselves. And we have, just to mention, I mentioned some of the tips and red flags, and we have on our website something that we call the safe test. So if people are considering maybe availing of a financial product or service, we urge them to take the safe test. It's a 4-step test following the letters of the word safe. And at each of those stages or each of those 4 steps, it tells you different things to think about before you engage in these services. But it's very much just about awareness. And we all have different, I suppose, levels of, business, where some people are more business savvy or financially savvy than others. And I would say if you're unsure about something, talk to somebody. You don't want to be one of the people who regrets not making a call to whether it's a friend who might be a little bit more savvy or an advisor or somebody. It's the worst position to be in the world to be after the event saying, if only I'd called someone and ran this by somebody else. So don't rush in.
Don't rush in. And unfortunately, and finally, Peter, a lot of the people we're talking about today, they're vulnerable, and they do it because they're under awful pressure to get money, and yet it costs them a fortune then.
Exactly. And we see, like, the advance fee fraud that I mentioned there a minute ago, which is around the loans and where you're charged a fee and the loan never comes. We saw one recent example of that, and it was a website offering these loans, and of course there were no loans, it was a scam. But the amounts lost, we got 35 or more complaints in 2 weeks in relation to this website, and the amounts lost in that particular instance ranged from I think around 150 at the lower euro at the lower end to over 1,000 euro at the higher end per person. So like very significant sums can be lost by people on these. So it really is worth just taking that step back.
Peter Gallagher, keep up the good work. Thank you indeed for joining us from the Central Bank today. Please go to the Central Bank website, look up SAFE, and go through the 4 steps. Talk to you after news.